Happy Halloween. Boo. Welcome in, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk. I'm Scott. He's Lauren. And we're glad to have you along with us. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday. Hope you get all the candy that you want and deserve. Just don't eat it all at once. Don't get yourself a tummy ache. Lauren, do you remember your youth as dressing up and all?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Did you go trick-or-treating and all
well,
that
I did,
stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember much about it, but I do remember being recognized when I thought I was fooling everybody. Hi, Lauren. How are you? Hi, Sonny. How are you?
Lauren, still trying to fool everybody now, but we're glad to have you here. If you want to join us, you can. Our phone number is 351-5667. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. And today we will visit with Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News, get some updates on Illinois recruiting. What's all the fallout? And I know, Lauren, you've been talking about it plenty over the weekend and even yesterday morning with the Talen Horton-Tucker decision, but how does Brad Sturdy size that up and see where that is going? We'll catch up with him. I also had a chance to catch up with a unique individual, Michael Leach. He's now manager of NFL Labor Operations. He's an alum of the University of Illinois, was a student manager for the football team under Ron Zook, became the lead assistant for Lovie Smith, not as a coach, but as a sort of in the coach's office for the Chicago Bears, and now is up at the higher ranks of the NFL, so I'll get a unique perspective from him. Fairly young guy. He's only about 30 years old and working.
Wouldn't you like to know the record of all those student managers over, you know, six or eight a year that go out into the world and just become very, you know, successful?
You know what? And having hung around some other Illinois sports teams, the managers make a lot happen, and they are very sharp people. They have to be very organized. They have to anticipate the coaches' needs, the players' needs, keep everything moving.
And it's volunteer work.
Exactly.
You don't have to do it.
Yeah.
So you don't get somebody that doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, right. Well, I can. You know what? I'm not sure. A positive. They do get some. If it's considered a job or not, but the hours they put in, and the, you know, with the team and every practice they're there, they're just like a player. They're making sure after practice is over, they're tearing down things or setting up beforehand. It's a huge undertaking. But
they almost have more of a manager on the basketball team than they got players.
That's
pretty
true.
Close.
Yeah. Anytime there's a timeout on the floor now, you see the players get surrounded. Like, who are all these people? What are they doing down there?
If somebody falls on the floor, they're all out there cleaning it up. I saw eight guys in a circle doing it one time. Eight guys.
So we will get to that as well. Some of the things going on today. Of course, tonight it is the World Series, Game 6, Houston and L.A. Been a very exciting World Series Sunday night. I fell asleep. I woke up in a bit of a fog and saw the score said 12-12, and I said, that can't be right. I've got to be dreaming. But apparently that is what is happening as the home runs have abounded. 22 of them have now been hit. Seven different players on each team. I guess that makes 14 total players have hit a home run in this series. Are the balls juiced? LA's starter tonight, Rich Hill.
I don't feel like he's ahead of schedule because I feel like I can.
That is not Rich Hill, but Justin Verlander talked about the two teams.
Coming into Illinois, I thought I could play at the level. And,
like, well, I don't have either one of those there, so we apologize. Swing and a miss. But nevertheless, are the balls juice? We don't know, but some pitchers have been saying so. And it does raise eyebrows when this many home runs have been hit. Now, Houston's a bit of a bandbox. L.A., though, notoriously doesn't – the ball doesn't carry as well at night, but had no problem. Of course, it was 100 degrees, at least for game one.
Yeah, it was really really flying out of there that night. Talked to Itch Jones, former Illini baseball coach here today, and he told me that he thinks the balls have definitely been – I guess the word is juiced, but the main thing is that the seams are lower. It's more difficult to spin the curveball with a lower seam, so maybe that's part of it. But I don't know. You hear this from time to time.
Are you going to be watching tonight?
I am. I don't know anything else that's better to do tonight. I'm not going to watch politics. I know that. I'm just about ready to swear off. I love to watch it, but my goodness, it's getting old.
And as we say that, too, we are also aware, obviously, of the deadly terror attack in New York City, and you'll be continuing to hear updates about that from our partners at CBS News, and thoughts and prayers going out to those affected, and a very stark reminder of the harsh realities of our world sometimes as we sit here and talk about the lighter things of sports and whatnot. You heard in our newscast the last hour and sportscast as well, if you want to go see Illinois play Eastern Illinois on Friday night in the basketball exhibition, you can't do it. It's sold out, but you'll hear it here on DWS. Brian Barnhart and Doug Altenberger will be on the call. It's going to be a very tight, I think the capacity down there at Lance Arena is only about 5,500, but I think it'll be a good opportunity for, I think it's a great thing what Illinois here and EIU are doing. I love that they're doing it at EIU as well.
Yeah, and Lou Henson's going to be going. Tommy Michael's going to set him in the front row, I believe. So Lou will be down there for the game Friday.
Told you about Rich Hill here. Let's see if we can bring those comments to you now.
No, not really. I think they've been extremely consistent in the World Series and also, you know, in the playoff games as well. So I haven't really seen too much of a difference or variation in seams or, you know, any size of the ball.
We'll see if Rich Hill still feels the same way after Game 6 tonight. Here's Justin Verlander on the similarities between the two teams.
You got the right mix of veterans with younger talent. The younger talent is wise beyond their years and playing like veterans. I mean, it's a lot of fun to be part of a World Series where two teams are so evenly matched, in my opinion.
Game 6 tonight at Chavez Ravine. All right, Illinois Golf in the East Lake Cup Finals. They advanced to the finals with a semifinals win today over Oklahoma, 3-2-0. That's match play after the round of stroke play. They finished third in stroke play. Now they are into the finals tomorrow. Dylan Meyer was the number one golfer for the Illini. He won his match. So did Nick Hardy and Mike Feagles in the 4 and 5 positions. And Giovanni Tadioto and O'Reilly lost there in the 2 and 3. But 3-2-0 go the Illini against Oklahoma. So that bodes well. Of course, that's a competition of the four teams that made the Final Four last year.
With different teams, of course. I mean, somewhat different teams.
Well, yeah, different rosters.
But,
not same.
Right. But many of the players are back. And Oklahoma's a defending national champ. Anytime you beat the defending national champ, you've done something. Now they got to see if they can win tomorrow.
Exactly. What else is going on? NFL trades have gone on. Former EIU standout Jimmy Garoppolo traded from New England to the hapless San Francisco 49ers, who will probably be putting him in action somewhat soon. The Philadelphia Eagles got a running back from Miami. Seattle got a cornerback and two draft picks from Houston for left tackle Duane Brown. Bears coach John Fox says Zach Miller is progressing well following surgery to save his left leg. I have not seen what happened to his leg. I will refuse to go watch that highlight.
Me too. I saw the play, and I just turned away.
It'll make your stomach turn. He's still in the hospital after tearing an artery while dislocating his knee. He likely also tore ligaments, but the more immediate issue was the vessel.
Let me ask you a question. I think this is a big question. Garoppolo's gone now from New England. They don't have a backup quarterback. Brady's is 40 years old, just turned 40, I believe. I know they're going to pick up somebody by Sunday in case, and maybe Hoyer. But does this mean that Belichick is basically just going to go as long as Brady? I mean, they're not planning for the future anymore, are they? I mean, maybe they never
do. No, you thought Garoppolo was kind of what Aaron Rodgers was while Brett Favre was the starter for the Packers.
But he was going to be a free agent after this year, so they had to do something.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues is they're talking about now that Brady thinks he can keep going and going.
I know he thinks that. But can he really go more than one or two more years? I mean, we don't know when the play is going to happen on the field that's going to end it.
Exactly. But assuming that doesn't, let's just talk about physical capabilities he has that would naturally diminish over time. When did those start? And how good is a diminished Tom Brady versus a really good whatever your other option is?
Diminished, not mentally.
Right, I'm talking physically.
And 90% of the game is mental.
Especially at quarterback.
You bet.
That's why Peyton Manning
was 90%, but only 90% after you determine that the guy has the ability to be a quarterback at some level. Then it becomes, how do you read? How do you avoid? He doesn't get hit very often. I mean, I know he gets hit from time to time, but he doesn't run very often and he doesn't get hit very often.
Here is what blows my mind about NFL football. If you look at the top starter pitching across every Major League Baseball team, most everyone is really good or phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's a really good. If you look at the starting quarterback for each NFL team, they're not all that really good.
There aren't enough to go around. They're like centers in basketball.
Exactly.
There aren't enough.
And it confounds me that football, the system somehow hasn't figured out how to get around that, something to figure out a different way. But as long as you have that quarterback, you're good, and mm-hmm. everything will come around. And you can build around that piece. You can't, you know, baseball, it's decided not really with your first pitcher or your second pitcher. It's decided by your third, fourth, and fifth starters and
sure.
your bullpen.
Sure.
That's the difference between the good and the
sure.
average teams.
Yeah.
Football, it's the other way around.
You bet. And there are probably only 8 or 10 really top quarterbacks. I mean, they come and go from time to time. I don't know where you placed Cam Newton in the thing. A couple of years ago, I thought he was really, really, really good, and now I'm not so sure. You know, I mean, they're just guys like that, and yet the stars like Brady just go on and on forever.
And it seems to be the stars that go on forever are guys like Brady, more of the traditional pocket passers. Now, Aaron Rodgers certainly can move on his feet and is
good.
Incredible yeah. at avoiding sacks and scrambling.
But look what happened.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Cam Newton types, Michael Vick types.
But I'm just saying, if Brady has an injury like Rodgers had at this point in his life, it's over.
Yeah.
And that's an awful dangerous thing at midseason for New England to do to and I know it's to their benefit, I guess, to move Garoppolo and get something in return, because after the season's over, they wouldn't get anything in return, possibly. But I just think that at this point, Brady's the only guy, and they got to go through the rest of this season with him as the only guy. Now, they'll find somebody to back up, but it won't be the same without him.
And Patriots fans will be holding their breath anytime he takes a hit.
You bet.
42 at 5:22, Sports Talk off and running. Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News joins us next. You've got Sports Talk.
Hi, this is Jim Bohannon. Join us for the next Bohannon Show. Rob Reiner, director of the new movie LBJ, starring Woody Harrelson. Your calls welcome. We'll see you tonight at 9 on DWS.
5:25 Sports Talk here on DWS. It's Scott Beatty and Lauren Tate with you. By the way, the 100th episode I have hosted here of Sports Talk. Disappointed, Lauren, that you didn't bring me any cake. Actually, I prefer pie. That's all right. I'll give you another chance.
Get some candy tonight if you just go out on the street.
I suppose. We welcome in Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News. He covers Illinois basketball and more. Joins us now. Good evening, Brad.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Good. Are you going trick-or-treating?
I'm not. My kids have kind of gotten past that stage. So this will be the first year we haven't gone trick-or-treating. So,
well, that just means they're out to make more mischief instead, I guess, right?
Yeah, maybe so. I think they like to give the candy now, so it's okay.
So. Well, hey, now that it has kind of settled a little bit after, it was last Thursday when Talen Horton-Tucker announced his decision to go to Iowa State and all these rumors surrounding what happened and what didn't happen. How are you sizing this all up? How do you look back on what happened? Or is it still being uncovered what exactly happened?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, at this point, it probably doesn't really make any difference. What we know is that, you know, Talen's not coming to Illinois, but Iodesumu is. And so that's where Illinois's got to kind of focus is, you know, they've got a five-star, one of the top players in the country coming in. So although they wanted to get two, they've got one, and so they're happy with what they've got, and they just have to fill out the rest of this class. And I think it's going to be the spring before they're able to lock down anybody else in this 2018 class. And they're going to look for they're obviously looking for some size possibly, or again, they want a wing player. They want a wing player who can come in and can shoot, and have some good skills out on the perimeter. And I think that that's kind of what they would need. And we'll see what they're able to find, in the late signing period, whether it's because of, coaching changes or whether it's just a guy who kind of blows up this year. You know, at this point last year, Mark Smith was not on the radar, and he's pretty good. So I think that sometimes guys come along, and not saying there's going to be a Mark Smith, but there could be somebody who kind of emerges.
Do you think there is any patching up now that Brad Underwood has to try and do, whether it be with Robert Smith, it's Simeon, with Mac Irvin people, with any other folks in Chicago after all this?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. You know, he's got to make sure that they understand that, you know, that everybody has to kind of do what's best for their program. And, you know, he had decisions, you know, had to be made. And, you know, and I think that they understand that. Doesn't mean they're happy with it, but I mean, I think they understand the situation. He's going to have to do a good job of explaining and outlining where they're at and where Illinois is going forward. And I think the biggest thing is now, you know, they've made a good impression on a lot of coaches who've been to practice and different things. But I think the thing now will be to go out and show it on the floor. And then you'll kind of gradually, you know, build back that relationship, build back that trust and, you know, kind of that social capital that he needs to build with the coaches in Chicago and around the state.
You know, Brad, I'm a little careful about making comments about this case because some of the things I've heard and read and even written, then the mother said, well, he never did really commit to Illinois, and then the Irvins are claiming, well, they never did. It wasn't up to them. It was okay with them. I guess they even threatened to take the Defender and the Tribune to court over claims of that nature. So I'm just standing back, and I guess I'm like you. We can't do anything about it now, so why worry about it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I kind of take that same approach. Anytime you're talking about things like this, you know, people don't go on the record, you know, and Lauren, you're in the business too. You get a lot of stuff that's off the record. You get a lot of information and people tell you things. And then, you know, later on you might read a quote that doesn't jive with what they told you off the record. So
right.
Sometimes that happens.
That definitely happened,
you know,
didn't it?
Yes. And so I think that, you know, that's the way things work. And, you know, it's part of the business. And, you know, at the end of the day, again, Illinois just got to move on, and I think they have. I think Illinois moved on. I think, you know, Taylor Norton Tucker's moved on, and I think I would assume he's moved on and ready to, you know, start his career at Illinois next year after he finishes his senior season at Morgan Park.
Well, what do you think? Are you going to be able to make it over to Charleston Friday night?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of excited about that. Of course, you know, I've seen a few games in Lance before. It's exciting to get down there and see, you know, Illinois and kind of a – it'll be kind of a neat venue, 5,400, you know, so it's not a huge place. It'll be nice to kind of see them in action in a game setting against an opponent. You know, I know they played a couple scrimmages already, but this one will be, you know, live for people to view and kind of get a good look at the team and what they look like and, you know, raise a little bit of money for a good cause. And hopefully they can, Illinois fans like it. I think there's a lot of positives to having this game. Not just from, you know, a fundraising and, you know, humanitarian. Obviously, that's the, you know, what they say it's for. But also for Illinois, it's just more experience. They need as much game experience as they can. They're very young, new system, so there's a lot of things to learn, and I think it'll be good for them. I'm excited.
You know, the danger is that you go down and you see them play one time, form a lot of opinions. And I bring that up because the players that stood out in the first game, the first secret game against Indiana State, were not the same players that stood out. I mean, Frazier had a much better game. Of course, he didn't play in the first game, but he had a much
right.
better game against right. Vanderbilt, and I believe that Kipper Nichols did also. And so some of the
yeah.
guys and Smith didn't do particularly well, and neither did Allstork do in the second game. So I think that this thing is in a growth situation, and we're going to have to wait for it to grow. But I'm like you. I want to see him, and I'll form some opinions that probably will be proven wrong later.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing about it. I mean, they're going to have – they have a lot of young guys that are playing, whether it's DeMonte Williams or Mark Smith or Trent Frazier, you know, and even Tijon Lucas, who's pretty young. And then they've got, you know Spicy G. You know, those guys are all – they're all new. And so, you know, you're only veteran guys. You know, Allstork's veteran, but, again, it's new to him. I mean, he just arrived, you know, I guess. So even though he's a fifth-year senior, it's a little different for him. But, I think the guys are thinking black. You know, it sounds like LaRon's been pretty consistent, done a good job. So, you know, those guys are going to have to be there every day. The other guys are going to rotate. You're going to have a day when Mark Smith looks – people are going to say Mark Smith's, you know, he's a one and done. Somebody will say that. Guaranteed they're going to have a game when he's going to say that. And then they're going to be games when you're like, you know, he's not very good or, you know, he's not ready. He's just a freshman. So that's the part of those young guys. They have days like that, and they're going to be very inconsistent. And as they get that consistency toward the end of the year, then you're going to see what the team's actually made of. So, yeah, we're going to draw some conclusions on Friday. But at the end of the day, you know, this team's going to be much different come December and January than it is right now. And I think that's what we're kind of looking forward to.
I think that's what's so key, because you just don't know what you have in this team right now. And the track record of Brad Underwood teams is his teams are very different come January, February than they were in November and December. That's just the history, because, you know, by some reports of what's gone on in practice, you know, they're not very good at all right now, because he's trying to hammer home this new system. What have you seen in practice?
Well, I mean, I think there's been some good things and some bad things. There are days when they look good and there are days when they don't look so good, and they're trying to figure it all out. I think coaches are trying to figure out the players trying to figure out the coaches. But, you know, from what I've seen, and I think Laura and I talked about it, there are days when balls are flying all around the gym and they're trying to play fast. And as they play fast, I mean, it just means they throw the ball farther out of bounds. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of learning going on, and you're going to see some things where they don't look very good. You know, there's going to be times when they don't look very good. But I think the one thing that's been upgraded, and the athleticism is greater. I think they're more athletic as a group. They have the ability to, get to the rim a little better, to get out in transition. And as they're able to, I think they'll shoot better as they adjust to playing a little faster, transition threes and things like that. And understanding the offense, how to read those, you know, whether it's a dribble handoff out of the pinch post or whatever it is, when to backdoor cut, all these different things. As they learn that stuff, I think you'll see more consistency and they'll look better. And I think that's where we're at with these guys. But I think the athleticism is much upgraded, and I think they're going to be good by the end of the year. You know, you just hope they don't dig a hole early where it makes it really tough to maybe sneak into an NCAA tournament because you lost some games early that you probably should have won or would have won in January or February.
We're talking with Brad Sturdy from orangeandbluenews.com. You can follow him at Sturdy32. And, Brad, we have a text question on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. 309 area code says, where is Tim Finke going to play college basketball at? Do you have any lead on where Tim Finke is going to be?
Well, I mean, I've heard Tim's got a lot of new schools. As after the summer, you know, with a few of the schools like Vanderbilt and Illinois kind of, you know, backed off. And I think for Tim, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to have a ton of good offers. He's gotten new high majors who've come in, had interest, and he's really focused on basketball, you know, up to this point, and he's not really focused on recruiting as much. I look for him to kind of change that, you know, later on in the year. I think he wants to play his senior season and kind of go out and prove himself. And I think sometimes those guys that kind of have a chip on their shoulder have some really good, you know, seasons, and I think that's where Tim Finke is. I don't think he's close to making a decision, you know, right now. I think he's just going to see what comes out of this season. I know he's got a lot of new interest. You know, I've heard some, you know, a lot of different schools, so we'll just kind of see how it plays out. But I don't see him at least next, you know, until after the, you know, probably after the high school season, I would guess. You know, he'll probably be a spring decision, unless something just kind of blows him out of the water here soon. But I would think he wants to play. I think he's got a little bit of chip on his shoulder, a little edge where he wants to go out and show that, you know, he wasn't 100% healthy in July, and, you know, this is what a lot of these schools who backed off, this is what you're missing. And so sometimes those guys can be really dangerous and really really be effective and have great senior years.
Brad, circling back to the priorities for Illinois, you mentioned a wing, and Tim Finke is a 6'6" wing guy, but I have trouble seeing how he fits into Illinois. I mean, obviously, Brad Underwood rotates a lot of guys, but they're so perimeter heavy right now. Does a guy like Tim Finke really something that Illinois is looking for? That's not a knock on Tim Finke. I'm just talking about there are pieces Illinois already has.
Well, I think Illinois, that's the one piece. If you talk to coaches, the one thing that they really are looking for is a skilled wing, a guy who can be a 6'6", 6'7", got good size and can play, because they feel like they can use them at kind of a 2-3-4 type guy. And I think that they're looking, I mean, you can see they're looking at, they really wanted Finke. If you go back to last spring, you know, he was a priority, you know, in June before he had a rough July, he was a priority for Illinois. So I think he's the kind of guy they're looking for. Maybe a guy who, you know, and Tim didn't shoot the ball well in July. So I think they're looking for a guy who shoots a little better, maybe. Or possibly maybe a guy maybe a slightly more athletic wing, you know, somebody like that. But I think that's the kind of player they're looking for. I think he likes what Underwood wants. He wants guys who can handle the ball, pass the ball, and shoot the ball. He wants skilled guys who can do those things and have enough athleticism, just like every other coach, I guess. But in this system, I think you see guys who have the, you know, you have to have kind of a high basketball IQ, the ability to, you know, read the defense, you know, understand spacing and things like that in his spread offense. And also, but you got to have the athleticism to get up and down the floor. And so that's kind of what he's looking for. And I think Finke, you know, in June was a fit. I mean, he just struggled so much in July and didn't look like himself. And I think that's where Illinois kind of backed off. But I think a player like that wouldn't be a bad fit if, you know, maybe a guy shoots a little bit better. And maybe one of those guys will emerge throughout the high school season.
Well, that's exactly what Landers Nolly and Taylor Horton Tucker were. I mean, they were the kind of forward that would fit in that spot. I think they need a center too, but you got to get somebody better than Greg Oboboyden. You got to have a better one because it doesn't make any sense to bring in somebody that isn't that good. And I don't think there are enough centers to go around. I keep saying that, but there just aren't.
No, and you know, it's hard for this year, for this 2018 class. It's been hard to find a center for them because everyone knows that, you know, Finke and Black are coming back. I mean, you know, so the next year. So every kid that comes in is going to have to compete with them for playing time early on. So if you want to play like early and maybe earn starters minutes, it's going to be tough that first year. But after that, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to play a lot. So I think it'll be interesting to see who kind of emerges throughout the high school season from a big guy. And if they have to wait a year and they can pull a kid like, you know, Francis Okoro from 2019, then obviously that's that'd be a huge get and that kind of make up for not having a big guy in this 2018 class.
Brad, always good stuff from you. We appreciate your time.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Brad Sturdy. Follow him at Sturdy32. Read him at orangeandbluenews.com. You're listening to Sports Talk. I'm Scott Beatty, and right now I want to talk to you a little bit about Rosecrans. For over 100 years, Rosecrans, a national leader in addiction and mental health treatment, has provided help, hope, and lasting recovery to children, youth, adults, and families. Recovery from substance abuse and mental health disorders benefits everyone, the individual, the family, the community. Your loved one can restore their hope for a bright future that comes with recovery. Rosecrans is here to help. A committed community partner in treatment for mental health and substance abuse disorders in Champaign County, Rosecrans is pleased to welcome former NBA player Chris Herron as the keynote speaker at their fundraiser this fall. The event, Hoops, Help, and Hope, will be held the evening of Thursday, November 9th at the I Hotel in Champaign. Chris will share his story of descent into addiction, a miraculous recovery, and a new life mission. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit rosecrans.org/champaign-benefits. We talk with Michael Leach when we come back at Sports Talk. On Sports Talk. Over the weekend, I had a chance to catch up with a unique individual, Michael Leach. He was a student manager for Illinois football under Ron Zook. Started working for NFL teams, including as an assistant to Lovie Smith, and now is manager of NFL labor operations, that is, in New York City. Here's some of that conversation I had with Michael Leach. We are visiting with Michael Leach. He's currently manager of labor operations with the NFL, but an alumni of the University of Illinois. He got his start in football as a manager on the sidelines for Illinois football. Michael, thanks so much for your time. Welcome back to campus.
Fantastic. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your memories of your time on the sidelines with Illinois.
Fantastic memories. You know, the 4 years I was here serving under then head coach Ron Zook really helped shape my perspective on what I wanted to do in the future professionally. You know, learning the game of football, serving under coaches, seeing how vigorous the process was day to day, week to week, really kind of set the course for doing this long term and loved every minute of it. You know, it was a lot of grunt work as a manager, scrubbing those balls and taping those pads, but you know, that's when I realized that being part of something bigger than myself mattered. It was something I wanted to do, so I could not be more grateful and blessed to have chosen this journey for sure.
Could you have seen when you started that you would end up working for the NFL?
You know, to be in all honesty, I did. I mean, you know, cause I'm a faith-driven guy. You know, I'm here by the grace of God. I know that first and foremost. And I think we all have dreams, right? But we block our dreams when we allow our fear to grow bigger than our faith. And I spoke years ago that, you know, if I'm going to do this, you know, you want to operate at the highest level possible. And the NFL is that in the game of football. How that was going to happen, I don't know. But I knew I was going to just set the course for the direction and do what I could to serve as a servant leader with hopes that a mentor would take me along his wing at one of these days, and it worked out, and here I am now.
Did you find that mentor?
I did. You know, it's a funny story. You know, so during my time here in Illinois, I had an internship, 4-week internship at Bears training camp. Very, very, you know, low level, just going there to work and be around. But while there, chose to network. You know, I operate from this premise that everyone communicates, but few connect. And the challenge is, how do you identify those connectors that you aspire to be and inspire to be around? And so I was always inviting people during that internship, hey, can I have lunch? Can I do coffee? At the end of this internship, it was so funny. No one sat down with me, right? But the last day of this internship, granted, the interns could still eat in the same cafeteria as the full-time staff and the plating. I said, at least, you know, I got some great food out the deal. Great internship. In comes one of the many people that I had asked to sit down with me. He's actually Andrew Hayes Stoker, the wideouts coach for Illinois now. So he's coming in. He was just a football ops assistant at the time. We sat down. We had dinner, connected. I just stayed in touch with him over the course of 5 years. Little did I know, in that same five-year span, that he developed a very close relationship with Lovie Smith. So one of the worst things you can do in life is choose the right thing at the wrong time. It was just right timing, and an opportunity presented itself. Didn't know Lovie directly, but we had some mutual people that we had worked with and were familiar with, and by the grace of God and right timing, things worked out, and he gave me the biggest shot ever at the age of 24. So I'm forever grateful and blessed for that.
We're visiting here with Michael Leach, who's now manager of labor operations for the NFL, but you then became assistant to a head coach and the coaching operations for an NFL football team, the Chicago Bears, and Lovie Smith. So what did you do for them?
Yeah, so in that role particularly, you're really serving as the personal assistant to the head coach. So you're the conduit between the head coach and any and everyone else. So that's players, ownership, cross-departmentally. You're managing the coaching department's budget. You're managing the head coach's calendar. You're traveling with them on a charter to games, serving on the sideline as needed. Anything and everything the head coach needed, you were there for. And that was a holistic, a lot of, you know, finite details that goes along with that, that came week to week, day to day. But phenomenal experience. I really, really learned a great deal of what leadership looks like firsthand, serving in that capacity, you know. One thing I will say about Lovie is that he has he's very even keel, right? He never gets too high or too low in success or adversity, but he has a very deep understanding on what it takes to build something great. And that's, you know, comes full circle for me here with him serving as a head coach here at Illinois. Having patience, you know, trusting the process. Building something great requires time, resources, and I just cannot be more thrilled with the direction he's taking this team.
Michael Leach is with us. He's now manager of labor operations for the NFL. Started as a football manager at Illinois under Ron Zook. Worked in various capacities with NFL teams, including the Miami Dolphins and the Chicago Bears, as we just heard you talk about. What is your role right now? How would you describe it?
So I serve in the management council on the labor operations side. And the management council, in short, it serves as the multi-bargaining unit arm of the NFL. So we enforce, administer, and carry out the collective bargaining agreement with the union. Okay, so now for me personally, that requires compliance with player contracts, the salary cap for 32 clubs, a component of the CBA known as the work rules, you know, what clubs can and cannot do with players throughout the course of the season. I also do a lot of work in diversity. You know, I help lead our Bill Walsh Diversity Coaching Fellowship Program, and that's geared towards creating a diverse pipeline of coaches, both at the pro level and the collegiate level, you know, getting those coaches in, grooming them during training camps, and creating a space for them to become full-time coaches, something I'm very passionate about. So all in all, compliance-driven around the CBA is how I serve there in that capacity.
We're with Michael Leach. He's a U of I alum, now manager of labor operations for the NFL. You graduated in 2009.
Yeah.
You're maybe around 30, and you're managing on a labor council for the NFL. I imagine there's a lot of people that are asking things, wanting things, demanding things. These are people of influence. These are people of celebrity. These are people of power. How do you, at a relatively young age, navigate that and learn to say no when you have to, especially as one who has to help enforce things?
Wow. I mean, number one, the goal is to be humble. You know, you want to work from that place. And you want to work from a place of, how can I serve you? You know, my form of leadership philosophy is servant leadership. You know, how can I add value to what you're doing and where you're going? At the end of every day, each person wants to know where they are, where they're going, and how they're going to get there. And where it comes in for me, regardless of age, I'm here to serve you and to help you be in compliance with something, or I'm here to serve you or help you operate at your fullest capacity, at your greatest potential. And you do that by operating within the confines of what's in front of us. So whatever that topic is or that rule is, I'm going to provide you the framework, yet the freedom to carry that out, because leadership is influence at the end of the day. And you try to serve along the way, and you'd be surprised at what you gain influence-wise when you just choose to serve first. You know, if you're too big to serve, you're too small to lead. You know, I believe that. So I just try to, you know, move the titles. You know, the only thing a job title can buy is a little time, either to increase your level of influence with others or to undermine that influence. So I try to remove job titles, establish authentic relationships, you know, that idea about connecting. And what I will say to end this long-winded answer is just making sure that they feel seen, heard, and valued. That's what every person wants. I don't care if it's business, if it's a contract you're negotiating, if it's a position you're seeking, as long as that other person feels seen, heard, and valued, and you get the message across in a clear, concise way, everything works itself out.
Now, give us a little window, if you would, into working in the top ranks of the NFL, because you grew up in the Chicago area, you worked for Lovie Smith and the Bears. Are you allowed to be a fan when you work for the NFL of any of the teams?
Oh, you certainly can be a fan. You know, if you were to come visit 345 Park Avenue and take a tour through our offices, you will see on folks' desks different variations of fandom. I mean, you have helmets from every club represented in that building. On the weekend, guys engage in fantasy football as well. So there's a little bit of competitive drive edge there. You know, it gets the engagement going. But for me personally, I've always been a fan of Chicago. From Chicago, grew up here, served and went to Illinois. But over time, I've become just a fan of wherever my friends go, where my relationships go. You know, this business has a way. Someone's getting hired and unfortunately fired, you know, at the end of each season. So it tends to spread my friends out. So anywhere that they end up going and coaching or serving as an executive, I kind of just follow where they go and root for them, you know, because, again, relationships is the ultimate win factor for me, beyond just the wins and losses.
We're speaking with Michael Leach, manager of labor operations at the NFL Management Council at the NFL. The NFL obviously has been in the headlines. From your personal perspective, what do you love about the NFL and what maybe needs to change, if anything?
Well, I will say this. The one thing that I do love about the NFL is that we are constantly always looking to improve. Me personally, they really encourage me and empower me to become better and to find new ways of doing things. I love the cross-departmental collaboration. You know, you will have employees there internally work outside of labor ops and football ops, or some help with officiating, or some help with international and how we're looking to grow that. Some help with our diversity initiatives as well. And even in the community, you know, we get into the communities and we visit different Boys and Girls Clubs and serve there in those capacities, going to schools. Like, it's very much a cohesive, collaborative, creative working environment, but you do have that constant push, if you will, week to week, to improve. How do we get better? How can we take the draft to the next level? How can we do this project at another level? How can we reach more? How can we engage more? And you look at the digital age now, you know, streaming on Amazon Prime now, that's amazing. You know, like, it's a multi-generational workforce, and as a millennial personally, what I appreciate most is the fact that we can still work and do this thing together. This idea that we is greater than me, and nothing does that better than the NFL, in my opinion. Nothing does.
Michael, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us here, and best of luck. Come back anytime. You're welcome with us.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Michael Leach, got even more with him at our website, WDWS.com, and Illini Sports Interviews as a podcast. We're back in a moment on Sports Talk to wrap it up.
For Fighting Illini football as they take on the Purdue Boilermakers at Ross-Ade Stadium in West Lafayette. 11 o'clock kick, 9:30 Illini game day with Scott Beatty, Saturday on DW.
5:58 Sports Talk, almost to the finish line on this one. Scott and Lauren with you. Tomorrow on the program, Deion Thomas, radio analyst for Illinois basketball and one of the all-time greats to wear the orange and blue, will join us. Thursday, we will talk with Mike Carlin of the Lafayette Journal-Courier. Did I remember that one right there?
Yeah, I get a mix-up. It's either Journal-Courier or Courier-Journal. I can't remember.
get a preview of...
One's in Louisville and one's in Lafayette. Yeah,
get a preview of Purdue and Illinois on Saturday football. Is this the week they snap the losing streak, Lauren?
Well, they've got a chance. And this is a team that can definitely be beaten. They're playing a little better than, you know, they really let one get away against Nebraska. They had Nebraska beat all the way into the final minute. And so I think Purdue's playing a lot better than they thought, than we expected them to. But Illinois wins over there. They win over here. So where are we playing this one? Over there, right?
That's like the last five or six or so have been won by the road team. So I guess it's Illinois' turn.
It's Illinois' turn.
And, hey, if Chase McLaughlin hits a field goal last year, it's a different story anyway.
Yep.
And, hey, Lauren, appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you to our guests so in the program, Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News, Michael Leach from the NFL. Thanks most of all to you for listening. Blake Land, our producer engineer behind the scenes tonight for Lauren Tate. I'm Scott Beatty wishing you a good night. Enjoy the World Series if you watch it. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. This is News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. World News Roundup is next. Time at the tone will be 6 o'clock. Good night.